The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And coming up on the program, we will be talking with one of two actors, along with soloists and chorus, who will be joining the Prairie Ensemble for a concert on Saturday night in Champaign, a program called Music for the Theater. And this half of the show, I'll be talking with three of the members of the vocal ensemble Chanticleer, all male members of all male choir, who are performing at the Krannert Center in Urbana tonight at 7:30. And two of those members have a rather close connection to the University of Illinois, as it happens. It's live and local on FM 90.9. Stay with us. Well, there's a typical performance, but that's sort of hard to typify. Chanticleer is. They just sang that music from a live CD called Love Story. That was the Creole Love Call by Duke Ellington, an arrangement by Harry Frommerman. And their program is Love Story that they're bringing to the Krannert Center in Urbana tonight at 7:30. And we have three of their members with us. Two of whom have degrees from the University of Illinois. One of them I actually knew a bit when he was here, Ben Jones, who is one of the three tenor section in the choir. And also Alan Reinhardt did his master's degree here. And Matthew Curtis did nothing at all at the University of Illinois, except he's going to be singing here tonight. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for coming in.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I have to tell you that the second half of our show is talking about a concert with an orchestra that I actually conduct. And we've been having rehearsals this week. And we should have been rehearsing tonight. But we are not rehearsing tonight solely so I can go hear you guys.
Because, that's great.
That's very nice.
Because I missed the choir the last, I'm not sure how many times Chanticleer has been at the Krannert Center since I've lived here, but at least once, if not twice, I think. And I missed you both times. Now, I say you, but of the three of you, Alan, you've been with the group the longest, 6 years.
Yeah, this is my sixth year here.
Out of how long an existence for the choir?
Well, the group's been around a little over 30 years, I guess 33, 34
yeah,
years.
Yeah, 1978 it was founded.
By a fellow who one of your educational efforts is named after now.
Yes, Louis A. Botto. One of our educational outreach programs in the Bay Area is the Louis A. Botto Lab Choir that we've kind of dedicated to his name. And it reaches out to 16 through 20-year-old students who are, you know, in school and interested in singing choral music and possibly going on for a professional career.
I know, Alan, you did your vocal degree here in opera.
Right.
Did I hear you say right before I opened up the microphone that you were a baritone when you were here?
Yeah, I was studying as a bass baritone.
Uh-huh. What happened to you?
Well, you know, technically I ran into some trouble, especially in the top part of the range, and I always had kind of a strong falsetto that I was actually, you know, working with in the vocal studio here. But it never really quite I was never able to incorporate it with my baritone singing. It always felt like an either-or kind of thing. And I moved to New York City after I graduated and, you know, fell in with the choral scene there and early music. And a couple people heard me sing in my falsetto, in my head voice, and they said, wow, that's a legitimate sound. You should, you know, pursue it. And it felt a lot better to me. I felt like it could be more expressive, more in tune. And so I just went for it.
But I guess I'm a little surprised that we should say to folks who may not know the whole makeup of the voices in Chanticleer, you have your sort of typical mixed choir naming of your voices. You have soprano, alto, tenor, bass, but it is all men.
Right.
So the tenor voice, I would have thought in that group would be more of a full voice tenor, or have you developed that with the falsetto and head voice at this point?
We have three full tenors, and Ben and Matt are two of the three.
You're singing alto.
I'm looking in the wrong line.
Yeah, okay. That explains that.
Yeah, I went from singing as a baritone to an alto, to a countertenor. And Chanticleer has six countertenors in the group. So it's basically divided countertenors, and then the rest of the half sing in the chest voice and the tenor and bass baritone registers.
Well, but it's worth noting, too, that you sing bass.
That's true. I have continued singing bass when necessary. So there are times where we only do kind of tenor, bass, bass arrangements, and the countertenors have to kind of do double duty. And I'm the only one in the countertenor section that actually has a bass voice as opposed to a tenor voice. And actually, I can sing, you know, down where, you know, not as low as Eric, but he's my partner when I get to sing down there in the bass section.
Well, I used to hear that baritones often made more natural countertenors, but I guess I don't know how much that's true.
That was my impression too before I joined Chanticleer, and then I came to the group and I'm the only one. All the rest of the rest of the five, you know, have had, you know, a little bit of experience singing tenor. I do have a lower countertenor voice that might explain, like, compared to the rest of the guys, because you know, two or three or even four of them can sing way up in the soprano range.
Well, the ones who are singing in the soprano range, mm-hmm. are they necessarily, as a friend of mine put it, falsettists, or do any of them have that a really non-falsetto and they just sing up there?
Well, it's really a terminology. It's how you want to call it, but we're all falsettists. We're all using our head register. And that's just, you know, the resonance is higher. We're still using the same, you know, technique as a tenor or bass would, but just, you know, the resonance is in a different place, a little bit higher up in the mask, and you know, it has that very unique quality still. But yeah.
I want to for our listeners give a little sampling of some of the range that you sing on, not only in your concerts, but are represented in your recordings. And the range is pretty vast, going from Gregorian chant to, well, we heard some Duke Ellington, to things that are even more contemporary than that, in some awfully quite wonderful arrangements, including some by your more recent past music director, Joseph Jennings, I think, is some pretty famous arrangements. But the one I'm going to play next is one that inevitably makes me virtually swoon, and I used this for a while as an audio audition piece.
Oh.
You know, for when I was selecting a stereo system, because if this sounded really great and emotionally moving and so on, then it passed muster, at least for an aspect of it. This comes from Chanticleer's CD called Wondrous Love, a World Folk Song Collection. It's from a while ago, I guess 97, and Chanticleer will be at the Krannert Center in Urbana for a concert tonight at 7:30. Scottish tune called Loch Lomond, an arrangement by Ray Vaughan Williams, sung by Chanticleer from their CD called Wondrous Love, a World Folk Song Collection. Some really nice stuff on there. And that comes from the late 90s. The soloist was Frank, did you say he says his name Allbinder?
I think it's Allbinder, yeah.
Allbinder,
yeah.
So obviously a former member of the choir.
Yes.
You guys would probably know for certain. we're talking with three members of Chanticleer, Alan Reinhart, Matthew Curtis, and Ben Jones. Ben Jones, you got your undergrad here at University of Illinois.
That's right.
Were you in voice performance? What were you doing?
No. I got a literature degree in the film study school.
Really? I had no idea because I've seen you. I saw you in a couple of operas. I saw you in, was it a two? Wasn't a two-person show. You did this.
The Mahagoni Zongspiel, right?
I saw that. I did see that. You did something at Smith Hall one time in room 25. You and Morgan Dietkus. I don't know if you remember Morgan.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember what the show was.
That's a Broadway show. Or yeah. Off-Broadway show. Two-person show. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... Gosh, I haven't thought about that in a long time. Back in the days when I was acting a little bit, yeah,
you were even a good actor.
Oh, well, thank you very much. These guys wouldn't know anything about that.
No.
I just mean they haven't. I haven't done anything like that in a long time. Singing mostly these days.
Before Ben joined, I got to see him do Beach Blanket Babylon in San Francisco.
And that was, so you did see
that
him.
Was I did see him on stage and acting and dressing up like a poodle.
Oh well, that should
I'm
be good.
Bright red.
Well, Ben, how did you end up in Chanticleer? I mean, what's the whole process of getting there?
Well, you know,
or what was your process?
I was studying academics at the University of Illinois. I went from physics to English to rhetoric to film. And landed there, finally got the degree. But the whole way I was studying voice with Dr. Barrington Coleman, who I guess you had in the studio yesterday.
He was just here 2 days ago.
He was he is the director of the Varsity Men's Glee Club, the group that I sang with the whole time I was at the University of Illinois. And, you know, through studying with him, he encouraged me to do the operas. We did I did Sweeney Todd, Mahagoni Zongspiel, we did La Vida Breve, all with Maestro Eduardo Diaz Munoz while he was here.
So that must have been, well, he is here.
He is still here.
That must have been right at the beginning of his
right.
tenure.
Right, it was right when he came. He and I sort of became fast friends as well. And so when I reached the end of my time here, I was sort of encouraged by both Maestro and Doc to think about just applying for a master's, and I did so, and few schools were interested, and I landed in San Francisco, where I met a few of the guys in Chanticleer. And, you know, we hold auditions every year, whether or not there are openings. So I started to audition. I did so 3 times in a row before there was any opening at all, and then finally got the call right about the same time that Matt did, and he and I joined together 3 years ago.
And then once you win the audition... Is there a process to make sure you get to stay?
Well, it's like anything else. We have reviews twice yearly, and we talk about our performance and what we're doing well. And barring any major complications, most people have been able to stay as long as they wanted to, throughout the history of Chanticleer. Guys usually move on when they decide they, want to have a family or a plant. we're on the road about half the year, so it's a good job for a guy in his 20s or 30s.
I was going to ask you, actually, the photos I've always seen of Chanticleer always looks like it's pretty much a young guy's group. But there's one guy in there. Who's the guy with the mustache?
Don't say he looks old. That's...
I'm not going to say he looks old. I'm just going to say I seem to remember seeing him in virtually every picture I've ever seen of Chanticleer because you can't miss the mustache.
Yeah, that's Eric Alatorre, and he's kind of become somewhat of a face of Chanticleer with that mustache. And this year I think is his 22nd season,
yeah.
I believe.
23rd.
23rd season, so he started, he wasn't there at the beginning, of course, but he started about 10 years after the group was founded, I think.
And this was the person that you mentioned, Alan, when you said he's your bass partner when you sing bass.
Exactly, yeah.
In the group. Matt, you joined when Ben did. You're now the assistant music director.
I am, yes.
What does it mean to be a music director, and then what does the assistant do?
Well, the music director, his or her biggest responsibilities, I think, are forming the actual tour program that we perform 60, 70 times a year throughout the country and throughout the world, and also leading all of our rehearsals at home. And I think my biggest responsibility, other than lots of office work and filing and tasks such as that, just making sure that everything runs smoothly backstage, you know, before we go on, just make sure everyone's calm, everything's organized, because that's one place where the music director does not go. So, just making sure that we're ready to go on stage, I think, is the biggest task.
I was a little surprised to learn, which you mentioned to me before we actually started the show, that the music director is not a member of the group. That hasn't always been true. I mean, is not a current singer in the group.
Yeah, there were a few times where the music director also sang in the group, but it works better for us to have a 13th set of ears, you know, not in the ensemble, who can at a concert, you know, be out in the audience and hear what's going on, because one thing that I've learned is that the way that we sound in the ensemble is much different than how we sound out in the hall. So I think that's the biggest advantage of that. So that's kind of a standard that we've set.
I'd be curious, how do we sound different from the hall to being on stage, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, it's you hear all of the real picky tuning things and diction things that you hear when you're right there. It doesn't come across all the time in the hall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we sing at many different types of venues and concert halls and huge churches when we tour. So it's nice to be able to step back and hear what that sounds like mm-hmm. out in the room.
Well, I mean, just speaking as a conductor who has also sung in ensembles and played on in ensembles, you really do have, it's a very different seat in the house because mm-hmm. you don't hear things the same way. Yeah. I mean, that would be my answer to that question.
Yeah.
But it's, I wondered too, if having the 13th man, as you called him, makes it a little easier for that guy to say, you guys need to do this, you need to do that, if he's then also not having to participate in the singing at the same time. It's sort of a little, more objective.
Yeah. It's a little bit more. There are many advantages to having more of a hierarchical system, I guess, if that's a word.
Mm-hmm. It is now.
There you go.
It is now. Okay. Here is, we mentioned earlier, Joseph Jennings, who was one of the music directors who did sing with the choir.
Yeah, he joined Chanticleer, I think, in 1983 and was with the ensemble for 26 years as a singer, as the music director, as an artistic director, and really kind of formed the ensemble and put us on the map.
Here's a little bit of his arrangement of a spiritual called Wade in the Water. This also comes from the CD that's called Chanticleer, A Portrait, which is from 2003. Chanticleer will be at the Krannert Center in Urbana for a concert tonight. They're actually kicking off the 125th anniversary weekend for the University of Illinois Varsity Men's Glee Club. We had that show a couple days ago with Barrington Coleman and Ben Jones, who sang with that choir. I mean, I hadn't realized that that's why you guys were here, but that's why you're here. And you get to hear them right now here on Live and Local. So you get an idea of, we were talking about the guy with the mustache, Eric Alatorre. That was him on the low bass in that setting of Wade in the Water, Joseph Jennings' arrangement performed by Chanticleer from their CD called A Portrait from 2003. Chanticleer will be at the Krannert Center in Urbana tonight for a concert at 7:30. They're also doing some outreach, including a workshop with the Glee Club, the Men's Glee Club, who we have mentioned earlier. Two of the guys here having degrees from the University of Illinois, which is very nice. And while we were listening to that music, Alan, you were just telling me that this the spiritual, of course, being an American genre, you guys are going to be doing an all or mostly American program, I guess, to open a new wing at the Met in New York, Metropolitan
yeah.
Museum of Art?
There's a new wing at the Met Museum. It's an American wing. And it's interesting because we perform there twice a year. And every Christmas we have a run of six double or three double headers, six concerts in 3 days, and we're there in the evening when the museum is closed, and we get to walk around, you know, in our area where we're performing. But we have been catching little glimpses of this new wing in the museum as it's been in the process of being, you know, restored, and it's beautiful, it's stunning, and we're doing an all-American program, similar to what we're doing tonight, but taking out all of the European music that we're doing and inserting some new American pieces, one of which you heard, Way in the Water.
Talk a little bit about the program you are bringing. We played one of the tunes from your CD called Love Story, and you're essentially recreating the CD on your concert tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Love Story is kind of Chanticleer's typical tour program in that we offer a bunch of different varieties of genres. We usually start with early music inspired by Gregorian chant, Renaissance music, music from the Spanish Renaissance, composers like Tomás Luis de Victoria and Sebastián de Vivanco. And we have some French chanson as well. We have some German romantic music with a set of Strauss. And then we always try to incorporate newly composed music for us on the program as well. So we have a set by Stephen Sammets at the end of the first half, and also at the beginning of the second half, a set by composer Stephen Paulus called The Lotus Lovers, which is a song cycle that he wrote for us a couple years ago, and we're doing a few of the excerpts from the cycle. And then we always try to finish the program with some more modern genres, such as jazz and pop and gospel and things like that.
And we actually, that's the officially unannounced portion of your program.
Yeah, we like to keep that that flexible both for us and for the audience as well.
So the song that we played at the top, which would be in that part of the program, may in fact not be on tonight's concert.
It's possible, yeah. You'll have to come
it
and
might
find
be,
out.
It might not be.
You'll have to come and find out, yeah.
Well, you mentioned Stephen Paulus, which is interesting because yesterday we did another. So it seems to be the week for choral music on this program. The Chorale, who are giving a concert in Champaign on Sunday night, are doing some music by Stephen Paulus, and Craig Jessup, who used to lead the Morbin Tabernacle Choir, was talking about some contemporary composers who he thought wrote particularly beautifully for choir, and Paulus being one of them, Eric Whitaker being another, and I notice he's represented on your program, and Stephen Sammets is somebody I don't know, so I'll look forward to hearing that music as well. Mm-hmm. Well, I wish we had the whole rest of the hour to talk to you guys, and one of these years, maybe, if you come back and we're still doing this show and you all happen to be not engaged in something else, it would be fantastic to have you have the whole group sing on the show.
But that'd be great, yeah.
You'd fit in our studio, in our performance studio, just. but you'd fit, and that would be a blast. Alan Reinhart, Matthew Curtis, and Ben Jones are all members of Chanticleer. Alan in the alto section, and the other two gentlemen both in the tenor section. There's three in each of the four sections. And you know, the one thing I'm going to ask you, because you mentioned it while we were listening earlier, Ben, the notion that you can't always think of yourselves in four parts, given some of the music you do. So you have a numbering process or something?
Well, that's right. We all have our own numbers. We're numbered 1 through 12, of course.
What are you?
I'm number 8. And what's fun about that is there's a long line of number 8s that are out there somewhere. You know, they're dentists and musicians somewhere else in the world.
But, so these are not numbers you can ever be retired.
No, that's right. That's right. They're not going to hang my jersey in the rafters. It's not going to happen. But yes, sometimes we do sing music in 6 parts or 12 parts, and it is much more convenient to think of ourselves, you know, as our numbers that way, so that we know who we're doubling or in octaves with, and we can speak very quickly in rehearsal in those terms. Also, if we have to jostle the parts around a little bit, and I'll say, "Oh, on these pages, I'll sing number 7." It can be
so
much more.
So you're not necessarily a permanent number 8.
Flexible. We sit in those seats as well in rehearsal. You know, we sit in a horseshoe in rehearsal, the circle as we call it, and we sit that way, you know, 1 through 12. And I'm always right between Matt and Brian in the tenor section, between 7 and 9. So, and you, what you have here is numbers 6, 8, and 9. Alan's 6, Matt's 9, yeah. And I'm 8. Yeah.
I think another reason, too, is that Chanticleer has been known as the orchestra of voices. And my voice in chair 9 is vastly different from chair 7, Brian, who also is a tenor. Just our timbres are much different. I have kind of a lower tessitura and range. My voice is different than Ben's as well. So when we're auditioning singers, we're not just looking for a tenor. We're looking for mm-hmm. a voice that can fit that chair 8 or that chair 9. And I think that's why Chanticleer has been so successful in its history in keeping the consistency of sound.
So you're looking for range, but also timbre.
Exactly.
Color.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. I'm really looking forward to hearing the concert tonight myself. Starts at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And let's go out with, this is another one, a tune that is on both the Portrait CD and also the Wondrous Love CD that I played earlier. It is a folk song from Ireland, I think.
It is, yes.
Called Dulaman, Michael McGlynn's composition. I think it's the same tune.
Yeah.
We'll find. I think it's the one I'm thinking of. And it's Chanticleer here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Stay tuned for my conversation with Henson Keys, who will be reading Shakespeare with the Prairie Ensemble in a concert Saturday night in Champaign. Anin vi in yoshin and nana thiri a wahit vi in yok in a rakal and kitchen. Dulaman, a pinnacle, dulaman, a pinnacle, a tulaman, dulaman, dulaman, a sparring, a tulaman, a pinnacle, a rakit make a lot of dulaman, pinnacle, dulaman, a pinnacle, a tulaman, a pinnacle, a tulaman, a pinnacle, a tulaman, a pinnacle, a tulaman, a pinnacle, a Chanticleer performing Michael McGlynn's Dulaman here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our program today is made possible by The Chorale, presenting Our American Connection, the 21st Annual Young Artist Scholarship Concert, this Sunday at 7 p.m. at the Pennsylvania Avenue. This is not correct. They're performing at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. To the best of my knowledge, the program will feature winners of the 2012 Young Artists Scholarship Competition. I need to get that announcement corrected with the appropriate people. And tonight at 7 o'clock in the evening concert here on FM 90.9, it's live at the Concertgebouw, Bernard Haitink conducting the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra on the program Mahler's Ninth Symphony. It's the Royal Concertgebouw in music of Mahler tonight at 7 on the evening concert here on FM 90.9. It's one of the several famous parts of Felix Mendelssohn's incidental music for William Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. There is actually a lot more than the famous parts, and all of it will be played in a concert by the Prairie Ensemble at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign Saturday night at 7:30. In full disclosure, that is an orchestra that I conduct, and this is our biggest concert of the year. We're using our full orchestra, and and also inviting a number of guests. We have part of the incidental music includes some vocal segments, short vocal segments. We that also have a choir. Ollie Watts Davis, wonderful soprano in our area, will be joining us. Elizabeth Buckley, fine mezzo soprano. And Emma Song, Champaign Urbana's premier lesbian feminist chorus, is their full name. They are going to be the female choir participating in a couple of those not quite so familiar moments from that music. And also, since we're doing all of the incidental music, much of the parts Much of the part that is less known is less known because you need the Shakespeare to go with it, because the music is meant to be performed while the play is going on. And so we've got a couple of very fine actors in our area who will be reading some of Shakespeare's play, in fact, some pretty good chunks of it. One of those actors is Joy Hofsommer, who is a frequent performer in our area with the Station Theater and elsewhere. She teaches at Illinois State University, and also the head of the acting program at the University of Illinois Department of Theater is Henson Keyes, and Henson is with me right now. Thanks
hey,
for
Kevin.
Coming in. You have a long history with Shakespeare.
I do, actually. It's when I was acting out of New York, I started getting work in Shakespeare festivals, and then the agents in New York, once they see what you're making money at, then they send you back for the same thing over and over again. So I ended up doing a great deal of Shakespeare when I was an actor full-time, and now I still do it a lot of times in the summers.
So is that a pretty good indicator, at least in certain aspects of theater, how you end up getting, typecast maybe, that the agents or the theaters say, hey, he made money doing this, let's have him do it again, rather than you're deciding, I want to pursue Shakespeare?
Yeah, well, although I was delighted to pursue Shakespeare. That is the way things go. If they immediately think, oh, he's going to be a leading man on a soap opera, then that's where they'll slot you. But that was never my problem. So there's nothing for me as joyful as an actor as living in that language. So I've done, I'm up to 35 productions of Shakespeare now as an actor and director.
How many different plays?
Oh, I've done, for instance, I've done King Lear 6 times. So there's a bunch of repeats, but probably 12 or 13.
Now, when you say you've done King Lear, meaning you have played King Lear?
Played the king himself once. And then I've also done 5 other productions, twice as the Fool, once as Gloucester, once as Albany. So,
Did you do Lear first, or did you graduate to Lear eventually?
Graduated to Lear, and then since Lear have been back to the Fool. So it's kind of all over the map, but it's a great opportunity for me here with this material to play Oberon, because I never get cast in Midsummer except as Bottom or Peter Quint or one of the character guys, being a bald old guy as I am today. So getting to play Oberon is a treat.
Well, I'm trying to imagine how one would. I've never seen A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. I know.
And University of Illinois did it not long ago.
Yeah, very sexy production last year.
And I meant to go, and who knows what happened, Same thing that happens to anybody. You meant to go and you couldn't or whatever, or just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really have in my mind what Oberon would look like in sort of any typical way, and I don't see why couldn't you be Oberon?
Well, I could,
but
he's usually an extremely handsome leading man type who moves really well so that he can do the fairy movements gracefully, younger than I usually. Younger and more romantic, shall we say.
Well, I know you brought along a little bit of the play to read. You mentioned Oberon, and so because the play is, it's pretty wide-ranging. I mean, you have the king and queen of the fairies, mm-hmm. Oberon and Titania, but then you have these other sort of bit characters of the sort you said you typically characters.
Mm-hmm. You have the mechanicals, who are Bottom and Quince and Snug and Snout, who put on the farcical play of Pyramus and Thisbe. And then you have the four lovers who all get lost in the woods. And when the three groups come together at the end, it's a great and happy ending for the play.
What are mechanicals? What does that mean?
They're just called that because they're tradesmen in the area who decide for no particular reason that they're going to do a play for Theseus's wedding day. For the king's wedding day. So,
is that a term pertinent to Shakespeare or pertinent to Midsummer Night's Dream?
It's really pertinent to their occupations more than anything else.
Oh.
Of the characters.
Okay.
One is a joiner, one's a carpenter.
So for the sake of this show, in order to focus things a little bit, and also because most of the incidental music does pertain a little more to them, there are three characters, with a couple of exceptions, who you and Joy will be focusing on, mm-hmm. Oberon, Titania, and this wonderful character of Puck.
Yes. Puck is a very mischievous fairy character who Actually, the fairies in this play, people think of the fairies in Midsummer as sort of little happy sprites, but they're also, they're extremely mischievous and cause a lot of problems at the same time.
And Oberon and Titania are just like a fighting old married couple.
Yeah.
Or maybe not so old.
They're having it, when the play begins, they're having a big fight about Oberon wants this kid for his train and Titania wants him for her train. And so they're having a big fight and Oberon decides to play a few tricks on Titania to punish her a bit for keeping the kid.
How did you enjoy, did you have to fight over who got to read the roles of Puck? Or are you, I don't even know yet, are you dividing them?
No, nope. Joy is going to do the Puck all the way through, and I'm going to do Oberon all the way through, and then we're dividing up the other ones.
You're not dividing up Titania.
No, 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 that's Joy. I'm not going to be Titania. But I am playing a fairy in the beginning, and Lysander for a minute, and Theseus as well, the king.
Before we have you do a little reading, I wanted to play one of the portions that is not done very often. This is one that involves, hopefully I got this queued up right, that does involve the voices and the chorus. A wonderful tune going on here, and a wonderful text as well. In this particular recording, it's Kathleen Battle and Frederica von Stade. We might get to Frederica's part. And the women of the Tanglewood Festival Chorus with the Boston Symphony there by Seiji Ozawa. It's music from Mendelssohn's A Midsummer Night's Dream, all of which you can be hear in a concert live by the Prairie Ensemble in Champaign on Saturday night.
Come now a roundel and a fairy song, then for the third part of a minute.
There is some of what is called simply a song with chorus, with the as they're called, the first and second fairy, and then the female chorus. You Spotted Snakes from Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream, Kathleen Battle and Frederica von Stade with the women of the Tanglewood Festival Chorus, and the Boston Symphony there by Seiji Ozawa. And you can hear in live performance soprano Ollie Watts-Davis, mezzo-soprano Elizabeth Buckley, and Emma Song, along with the Prairie Ensemble, conducted by myself, Kevin Kelly, hosting here live and local on FM 90.9. And the speaker earlier, I forgot to mention, was Judy Dench, wonderful actress, of course. And I don't remember if that line is being spoken by you, Henson.
No, that's a Joy line.
That's a Joy mm-hmm. Hofsummer line. Well, we do have some lines that are going to be read by you as Oberon, which you're going to sample for us, I think, right now. You want to set this up just for us a little bit?
Sure. This is near the end of the piece where, after all of the mischief the fairies have caused, Oberon has decided now that they're going to bless the house of Theseus and all the married couples with peace and happiness. So this is his sort of benediction. Now until the break of day, through this house each fairy stray, to the best bride bed will we, which by us shall blessed be, and the issue there create ever shall be fortunate. So shall all the couples three ever true in loving be. And the blots of nature's hand shall not in their issue stand. Never mole, hair-lip, nor scar, nor mark prodigious such as are despised in nativity shall upon their children be. With this field dew consecrate, every fairy take his gate, and each several chamber bless through this palace with sweet peace, and the owner of it blessed ever shall in safety rest. Trip away, make no stay, meet me all by break of day.
And then, if I remember, Puck finishes out the show.
Puck has the final benediction.
You said earlier that I don't remember exactly how you characterized it, but you said you sort of revel in that language world of Shakespeare.
That sense of verse and heightened language is something we've kind of lost in our current society today, and the ability to listen and make what I call word painting, that you can, through the way that you deliver this kind of verse language, you can make images pop into the minds of the audience. I think that's one of my favorite things about Shakespeare.
Do you, when you get into that language world, do you feel like you have just gone into another world entirely? I mean, do you mentally do that?
It is a little bit. It's because it's Shakespeare is so much about the words and not about pausing and naturalism that you've just got to invest yourself completely in making all of your character choices through the way you speak the language that you've got. It's all very text-based.
And have you ever been involved in a performance of this that used any of the music from Mendelssohn?
Actually, I directed this once, and I didn't use all of the Mendelssohn. I also used some of the music from the ballet Giselle, but I used a lot of the comic music from the Mendelssohn. Which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's some good stuff in there,
oh, yeah.
To say the very least. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, and it's really going to be a pleasure to work with you in the concert. We have dress rehearsal tomorrow night.
Yep.
We had a whirlwind tour of the whole thing last night, and audiences can enjoy all of that music, plus some music by Mozart, the Magic Flute Overture, and of Paul Bowles, and also of Eric Korngold, music for another Shakespeare play, Much Ado About Nothing. It's at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign, Saturday night at 7:30. I'll be giving a pre-concert conversation. I hope, actually, with you and Joy. I haven't talked to you about that.
Oh.
But we can talk a little bit more about Shakespeare for the audience, perhaps.
Sure, that'd be fun.
And including some music by Paul Bowles for something called Music for a Farce. I'll go out with a little of that in just a moment. Programs today on Live and Local are made possible with support from Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chai are available from their retail store, in local restaurants, and through Columbia Street Roastery's coffee service. More information is available at 352-9713. We also have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting features the Corkscrew's Dylan Heath pouring a selection of red and white wines, followed from 7 to 9 p.m. by live jazz with the Brian Holloway Something. This is 90.9 WYL-FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Here's a little bit of music from Paul Bowles' suite called Music for a Farce on Live and Local.